Think with me for a moment. What is one thing about yourself you really like? One thing. For most of us, this is difficult. We have a hard time identifying and especially affirming things that we really like about ourselves. And there are all kinds of reasons why. One, we might be afraid that we'd be taken as prideful. A second thing is that we've been shamed over time, perhaps over our entire lives, and we believe ourselves to be worthless. A third thing would be that we think that Christians simply shouldn't talk about this stuff. It's just simply worldly and off the table. Or a fourth thing would be that we look in the mirror and we actually do not like what we see. And then a last reason, perhaps, is that we actually want to be someone else, somebody else. I was in Washington, D.C. about 2 years ago at a conference with a bunch of pastors, and we had a chance to meet with our representative for our district in California, Ken Calvert. There were eight of us, and we were in a small conference room off the House of Representatives, and we were, you know, pummeling him basically with questions. And I would ask a question, he would answer. Another person would ask a question, he would answer, and as best he could. And it's curious that each time he directed his answers to this one guy, Scott Sharpen. Scott happened to be my roommate that year, and Ken would address every single one of his answers to Scott. And at first, I kind of had a little run-in with the green monster of envy, thinking, hey, wait a minute, I want some attention too. And I thought that for 10, 15, 20 seconds or something like that. But then I realized as I watched Ken talk to Scott, I saw something. I saw that God had actually made Scott in such a way that he could actually talk to senators and representatives and kings and princes, and he could talk to them credibly, and they would listen, and that interchange was powerful, and that God had not put that on me. He had not put that on me. I got back to our room after it was over, and I said, hey, Scott, I need to tell you something that I observed today. And that is that when we were there with Kit Calvert in that conference room, that as you were talking and as each one of us asked him questions, Ken answered you. He didn't answer us. And he's like, no, that really didn't happen. I'm like, oh, yes, it did. And for a few moments, I got bit by some envy, but I realized that God has put something unique on you, that if you cooperate with it, I think he'll really use you in that. That he has put this authority, this influence, this voice that you can speak into these areas of government and different things, and not the rest of us simply do not have that. Daniel had that, but we don't have that. I don't have that. Well, since then, he has actually made numerous trips to Washington, D.C. to actually do the very thing that we talked about there, is that he's talking to these people of great influence and things because God has put that on him. But one of the reasons why we don't like ourselves is because we simply are in envy about somebody else's life and wish we were like them. So the question comes back, does God want you to be comfortable in your own skin? Are there things about you he actually likes? Now, answering these questions either creates tremendous amount of unrest inside of us, or it can create a deeply settled kind of rest within us. As we've been discovering God's work-rest rhythms, taking his rest challenge, that resting in your own skin is also part of this larger equation. Are you comfortable with how God has made you? Are you comfortable with how God has made you? That's what I want to explore today, and we're going to be exploring that by looking at Psalm 139, with the big idea being that being at rest and content in your own skin with how God has made you is part of his gift of rest mindset to you. Now, we'll take Psalm 139 on the high view first, go all the way through it, and then we'll cycle back to one particular verse that addresses this in particular. But let's read from verse 1. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. And so the first thing that we see in this passage is that God knows David intimately. He's experiencing that, and God still likes him. And for us, we can say that God knows you intimately, and he still likes you. And we take great comfort from that, that nothing about us is hidden from God, nothing at all. And then in verse 7, he says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. And if I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, and if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." And so David has this keen awareness of God's presence, even in his deepest darkness. What we can take from that is God's presence is always near you, even in your darkest places. And that gives us great comfort, that you cannot get away from him. End of story, period. And this is intended to evoke feelings of security and comfort inside of us, feelings of safety. And that brings us to verse 13. He says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know them full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you." So David accepts and appreciates how God has made him. He says that you are, and he says of himself, "I'm a one-of-a-kind creation." But this for us is that you are God's one-of-a-kind creation, valuable and wonderful in all kinds of different ways. Have you noticed this lately? Now, we'll cycle back to this, but notice this. And then the psalm turns dark. Very dark. "If only you, God, would slay the wicked. Away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them as enemies." "Search me, O God. Search me and know my heart. Test me and know my every anxious thought. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." So David cries out to God in his time of trouble. We don't know that until this point in time in the psalm. But he is, within the psalm, he is waking up to the darkness within. That there's darkness out there, but there's also darkness in here, inside. And so he prayed at the very beginning, "You have searched me," and at the end, "Search me." That is that we bear the image of God and yet still have darkness within us. And when we go through trouble, this darkness tends to surface. So that's our kind of high view of this. Now let's cycle back into verse 14, where David says to the Lord, "I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, referring to himself. I know that full well. So King David looks up and he confesses in first person singular, I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. A real work of art. Wow. He doesn't say we are. He says, I am. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Now David looks in the mirror and praises God. Wow. He says, Lord, you made me. And it hasn't been easy, but wow, it's been good. You made me musical. Thank you. You made me brave. You made me king. Wow. You made me passionate. You gave me skills, like really good skills with a slingshot. And you made this mug, this face of mine, and it's good. And you made me with emotions, like lots of emotions, and sometimes they're a roller coaster, but Lord, they're good. When I look at me through your eyes, it's good, Lord. And so circling back to that first question, because that's what we see David doing, what is one thing about yourself that you really like? As I consider this wonderfully made verse, I think in three particular movements. The first one is, he says, I praise you, Lord. Meaning that we do this self-appreciation with God, which keeps us honest. It protects us from either pride or what I would call wormness, that is, thinking less of ourselves than God thinks of us. That your true worth, this is your first one in your fill in the blank, your true worth and uniqueness are discerned with God and his perspective. That we know that Jesus loved people. I mean, we know that. All of us know that. But do we know that he actually liked them? Because when I look at the Jesus in the Gospels, I see somebody who people are not only attracted to him, but he's attracted to them, that he actually likes them. He saw value in them. And they, when they came into contact with them, with him, they saw God and themselves very differently. It is, I would say, the miraculous power of generous acceptance. As I was pondering this morning, I wrote this in my journal, and I just wanted to share it to you because I think it has something to do with this discussion. I write, the way you gave forgiveness away to the paralyzed guy without being asked, wow. And the way you welcomed the sinful woman washing your feet with her tears, wow. And how you treated the woman caught in adultery. Wow! And the woman who was unclean with the issue of blood, and she came to you and she touched you and you said, woman, your faith has made you well. Wow! Wow! And how John had his head laying on your chest at the last supper. Wow! And how you received Peter after the miraculous catch of fish where he said, depart from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. And you said, Pete, we're going to catch people instead of fish. And how you changed his name when he affirmed you as Messiah. And that makes me kind of segue back to David and how David had this same sense of your generous acceptance of him. And it changed his perspective of himself and allowed him to see himself how you actually see him, as an image bearer with a flawed but very real sense of glory on him. It doesn't mean that we're not sin-stained and not in need of saving, but that your radical acceptance of us has a transforming effect. Coming out of that, our sense of worth must come directly from Jesus. And he is okay with us affirming that to him and agreeing with his good work in us. I love the way that the Apostle Paul says this in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. He says, we are God's masterpiece, his workmanship, his masterpiece. But if we disconnect our worth from God, which is what sin does, then we become distorted and proud and inflated. Or, on the other end of the spectrum, we become untethered and fighting worthlessness. Now, the reality is that you bear the very image of God and he does not regret it. But you only find your true worth from knowing him. You only find your true worth from knowing him. So coming back to this, what is one thing that you can praise God for that you like about yourself? That's number one. The second thing he says is, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I praise you, God, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That is to say that we appreciate our uniqueness, appreciate your uniqueness without worshiping it. That's right. Appreciate it. Lord, you did good in making me. You did good. Now, there's much about your humanity that is beautiful. Ruth Haley Barton wrote it this way: a balanced approach to spiritual transformation involves the joyful acceptance of who we are as one of God's greatest gifts to ourselves, to selves, and to others. This goodness includes the uniqueness of our body, our personality, the configuration of our soul and its unique way of relating to God, our background and experience, and even those things that we might consider to be liabilities and even deformities. I like the way that Saddleback Church puts this in terms of saying that you've been designed, you have been shaped for significance. You've been shaped to matter. You've been shaped on purpose. And they use this shape metaphor as an acronym, basically to describe these five kind of attributes of yourself. That God has put on you spiritual gifts, that is supernatural spiritual endowments that God has given, you both sometimes in the moment and sometimes things that actually stay resident in your life. The H in the shape is your heart, your heartbeat, your passion, the things that you notice, the things that you're passionate about. A third thing is the A in the shape idea is your abilities. You have spiritual gifts, you have heart, and you have abilities. Those are skills and training and natural talents and natural inclinations. All of us have those, and they're all different. Every person in the room is different by God. Then you have your personality. That's the P in this. That is that some of you are introverts and some of you are extroverts. Now, that would be obvious, but that's actually true. Some of you are creative. Some of you enjoy routine. Other ones of you love competing and others cooperating. And there are all kinds of intangibles within personalities. I mean, personality is a very big variable here. And then lastly, we all have different kinds of experiences. Spiritual gifts, heart, abilities, personality, experiences. That is, you have experiences of life and experiences in ministry and painful experiences and spiritual experiences and educational and work experiences. And all of these things compose you. And you are unique, and that by God. Accept this. Affirm this. Affirm you. I was at a small pastor's gathering, had to be 15 years ago, with a Christian statesman that I quite love named Dallas Willard. And Dallas had written prolifically about all kinds of things. I believe his Divine Conspiracy book had just come out, and it was profoundly impacting to my life. Well, I'm thinking, we get to hear Dallas Willard. But then when we got into the room where he was and he started to speak, I didn't realize that he's just this monotoned, very content-rich, monotone presenter. And he talked to us about our need for rest. And you've heard me say this a number of times, that like it or not, the Creator has designed you to spend 1/7 of your time at rest, and you violate this to your own peril. That comes directly from that talk. But the talk was painful. It was painful listening to him because it was ghastly boring. He didn't do anything to try to excite us or impress us or to woo us or to sell us or to promote anything. He just simply was Dallas standing in front of us. And I realized about halfway through the talk, and it was a long talk, and I fought going to sleep a lot of times, I realized I don't think I've ever seen a man who is this comfortable in his own skin. He totally does not have to impress us. He was that comfortable in his own skin. You are unique. And God wants you to be comfortable with how he has made you. Not how he has made you in comparison to someone else, but how he has made you. That's the second thing. The third movement that I see in this particular verse is David saying this about himself. I know this full well, meaning that you can know yourself. Where you are strong and weak, where you're insecure and secure, where you're fearful and where you're brave, what you're good at and what you're terrible at, your gifts, your history, your passions, your abilities, your successes, your failures, what you like and what you don't like. I, for a long time, did not like cauliflower. I'm sorry, I still don't like cauliflower. It's Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts, I hated those as a kid. Now there's some actually really, really yummy ways to actually cook them, and I love them now. But you have likes and dislikes. I mean, I even think about this with cars. If out there are so many different kinds of cars, and I think that there are some cars out there that are just truly ugly, but there are some people that look at those cars and see beauty in them. I don't get it, but they do because they're unique, they're different than me. Now, let's apply this for just a moment. I'm just going to do this with myself. What is it that I like about me? Well, I'm gregarious. People talk to me, and I like it. I like it. Actually, I've experimented with this all over the place. It seems like I have a sign, an unwritten sign that says, come talk to me, I'll listen to you, I'll engage you. And it doesn't matter where I am. And the kids and Becky have this theory that I engage them all the time, but it's about 50-50. Sometimes I engage them and sometimes I don't. I experimented with this in Boston at one point in time where I was at a Starbucks, a big Starbucks. I was the only person there. I got my coffee. I went to the furthest place away from the cash register. And I sat down with my back to the cash register and sat down and just started to read a book. And lo and behold, an old guy comes in and he goes to the cash register. He orders his coffee. He walks all the way across the Starbucks, walks in front of me, sits down. He says, how you doing? And he starts talking to me. I mean, what is that? But that's part of the way that God has made me. And I like it. I am a communicator and I like it. I'm really bothered when I see injustice and will put myself in harm's way when I see it, almost without regard to self or anything else. And I like that. I'm truthful, even to a fault. I mean, most of you know that about me, and I like that. I'm a good writer, and I like that. I enter a room full of people I don't know, and I think, new friends! And I like that. But for you introverts, that terrifies you. That'd be like the worst day of your entire life. I'm musical, and I like it. I'm bald, and I like it, even voluntarily. I'm a foodie, and I really like that. And I'm going to say this, and this is actually a little bit more dangerous for me to say within myself, but I'm actually kind of smart, and I like that. I like that about me because it is how the Master has made me, and it's good. Okay, now you. Now you think. How has God made you? What is good about you? How has God made you and crafted you specifically into the person that he wanted you to be, and you're different than anyone else. Now you, what do you like about you before God? Now, let me shift gears for a second. I want you to practice this, and we'll get to this in just a moment, but there's a dark side to this, and that is that many of us feel worthless. That we don't feel good enough, or we're simply just not enough in any kind of situation, that the fingerprints of perfectionism perhaps are all over you, that you're never enough. You want to be somebody else. You want to be like somebody else, and you can't seem to think of a single thing about yourself that you actually like. Perhaps it's because a parent or a teacher or some significant other actually just sort of nailed you over and over again, berated you, and shamed you into the place where you simply cannot see anything good about you. But I want to say to you that that is not the way that your Creator sees you. That is not the way that He sees you at all. Actually, in the gospel of Jesus, the good news of Jesus is that God sees you and he sees worth in you. The God of the universe says, you matter to me. Therefore, I am willing to pay an enormous price for you to adopt you into my family. You're that valuable to me. So I listen to people say to me over all these years in ministry, I just don't feel worthy. And I say, that really isn't the issue for you. God says you're worth it to him. He was willing to pay for you with the blood and the life of his own son. That means you are of incredible, of inestimable worth to him. And you need to know that. And you need to receive that. Now, it's also important to say that there are also lots of parts of us, of all of us, that are not things that we can celebrate or appreciate, that are not from God. They're flesh. They're things that are going to go away. They're inclinations that God is not espousing, and God is not saying that that's good about you. There's sin. There's flesh. There's all these different things about us. But I think that we talk about that so much so that we actually never talk about what is good about us that God has actually made us to be about. I love the way that Ruth Haley Barton again puts it on this. She's got a beautiful chapter in her book, Sacred Rhythms, on this. But she says, when was the last time you celebrated yourself as David celebrates himself here? When was the last time you looked at your body and thought it was beautiful or strong or amazing? When was the last time you experienced some aspect of life in your body, running or walking or dancing or lovemaking or rock climbing or birthing a baby or painting, and thought, it is the most wonderful thing that I am able to do this? This is you and me. And so I want to come back to the exercise that I began this message with. I want to ask you to get with some people that you trust. And I really mean that. Family members and different things. But sometimes our family members aren't the people that we trust. But I want to ask you to get with some people that you trust and ask the question aloud. What is one or two or five things that you really like about yourself? And then answer thoughtfully and reflectively. And don't settle for trite little answers and different kind of things like that. But what is one thing that you really like about yourself? And then five things, and then maybe 10 things that you really like about yourself that you could say, Lord, thank you. Thank you, Lord. We practice this in our house with this discipline that you guys, I've told you about this many times before, but we call it the love spoon. Some people say it's an Irish thing, some a Welsh, some a Norwegian thing. Wherever it comes from, it's wonderful. And what it is that you the person that's being celebrated that day on their birthday is usually what we do for us, is that they hold this spoon and everyone goes around the table, and there are a lot of us, everyone goes around the table and says something that we really like about that person. And it's kind of incredible because different things come out in affirmation of us seeing the fingerprints of God in each other. And so we've done this with each one of our kids and with Becky. We've done this for every year of their lives. I remember we did this for Hannah, in last August, and there were 30 people who did. It took a long time. It was a tear fest because everyone just let down their guard and said what they really think, and it just connected us in a beautiful way. We had this incredible experience together. But as I look at my kids, I look at Daniel. He's gregarious, sort of like me, but better. He's a rock star. He's just an awesome guy. And people love him wherever he is. He's an octopus. He's physical. And people love coming near him because they know he's going to love them. He is hilarious. He's creative. He's musical. He's wonderful. Hannah, our second born, she's like me in every way except for without all my bad parts. She's got all kinds of just this love capacity that is unstoppable, that's unbelievable. She has got the incredible ability to love people and to meet them where they're at in a way that feels like that they're the only person on the earth, that everybody feels like they're her best friend. She listens well. She's insightful and penetrating in her insights and all these things. Then there's Karis. Daniel and Hannah, both extroverts like me. Karis is an introvert like her mama. And Karis is a smaller sphere, but very high quality in that small sphere. And she's beautifully creative in how she loves people and what she draws out of them and how she's able to bring them into what they really are in their purest sense of being. She is able to, she's the one that makes these incredibly well thought out gifts for everybody at different holidays and at their birthdays. Becca, she's a ginger. She's a redhead like Crystal. And I don't know where they came up with it, that gingers have no soul, but Becca has a soul. Crystal has a soul. But Becca's passionate. And she's passionate. She's all of us have got this justice thing that we'll stand up against injustice wherever we see it. But Becca's got this really curious and insightful big heart for people. And she wants to work in pediatric oncology. She wants to work with kids with cancer because she cares about them deeply. She has this ability to see inside of their souls and draw them out and get touches on them that really just barely anybody is getting their touch on them. And then there's my wife. Wow, she's just incredible. She's got this steady eddy. She's grace under pressure. No matter what's happening in the world, her soul is steady. She's been the steadying effect in my world. But she has this ability to see in a penetrating way inside of people. She's not ruffled easily. She has this mercy that just bubbles up from her so naturally. She has this beautiful, calm way with people that brings a calmness into them, that brings the peace of God into their lives. These are people in my world. These are people in your world. And they have the Creator's image on them, just like you do. You have the image of God. You are in the image of your Creator. And He is not ashamed of that. And He wants you and I to enter in to appreciate with Him the good work that He has done in making you who you are, and then to deploy you beautifully in partnership with Him in all of these different things that fit you and stretch you all at the same time. But I want to ask you to enter into this, onto this playing field with me, to find the rest of soul that comes with receiving and accepting and being at rest with who God has made you. Would you do that with me today? I implore you, I beg you, would you enter onto this playing field with me, with the Lord Jesus Himself? Let's pray.